going, Bob?
Bo, good morning. Happy Sunday.
Same to you. Bob Belts, Bo Mitchell, this is You Get the Blessing. We're going to bless you by introducing you to a great guest. But first, we want to hear this song by the Beach Boys. So wake up, get with us.
Well, East Coast girls are hip, I really dig those styles they wear. And the Southern girls with the way they talk, they knock me out when I'm down there.
They don't make it like this anymore.
No.
Nope.
To change it to Colorado girls, right?
Tie in perfectly. California girls, folks.
I wish they all could be California. I wish they all could be California.
You know the story behind this one, Bo? You seem to know the story behind every Beach Boys song.
I don't think I do. But thanks for tuning in today, folks. Do you get the blessing? Bob Belts and I enjoy doing this program every week because you get blessed. You get to meet a lot of nice folks on our program who are changing the world for Christ. So stop right where you are, rest for 26 minutes, listen to what we have to say because it's always right on the mark, isn't it?
And we got a great guest today because he's a great friend of ours and a real leader in the city. And the fact that he's on our show means that probably now I'll get to go fishing with him soon.
That's how we work it. Yeah. We work the angles. Our guest is Luis Villarreal. Luis, thanks for being here.
Good to be here. Good to be with both you and Bob, Bo.
Tough to know how to introduce Luis because he was a pastor in the inner city for how many years?
Oh, about 22 years.
22 years. Then he founded and is the CEO, president of Save Our Youth for about how many years?
19 years.
19 yeah. years. And he's got all kinds of other things going on, nationally known as a speaker and a guy that influences about everything Bob and I think of whenever we do anything with the city of Denver. So just glad to have you, Luis, and especially what we're going to talk about today.
Part of the Narrowgate team.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, we got so much going together.
Including the fishing. Yes. So can we button that up early? What time are you fishing?
Anytime you're ready,
I wrote Luis an email one time, and I can't remember the occasion, but I said, Luis, since you're my only Hispanic friend, would you give me advice on this?
I forget what that was.
I don't remember either.
I think he was looking for a good restaurant. I said, well, there's plenty around.
Yeah.
Well, what we're going to talk about on this Father's Day is how to be a good father, because I don't know a better father than Luis, and we'll give Nancy, his beautiful wife, some credit too. But
good.
First, let's start by talking about our father. So let's start with you, Luis. Talk about your dad and maybe some of the top two, three things you learned from him.
You know what, Bo? I lost my father when I was 9 years old.
And I've asked the wrong question.
It's pretty insensitive, the kind of question you ask me. I said, what kind of show is this?
Of course, when you get to me, my dad walked out when I was 10,
well,
so we got two good things going there.
How about I talk about my dad?
Bo, talk about your dad a little bit there.
Bo, did you know your dad?
Luis, you are a funny man. What kind of show is this, he said? Okay.
We're supposed to give people hope here.
Let's skip that
one. Pretty sick that we're laughing at that.
No.
I can just tell you this. My dad was from a small farm named...
Where were you? The Oklahoma City. I mean, not Oklahoma City. Gosh, you just put me on the spot. I'm spacing.
You've been there.
I know. Red Cloud. Red Chief. Cloud Chief.
That's it.
All right.
I knew you'd get it. That's Cloud right. Chief, Oklahoma.
Yeah, there is a famous novel in which the main character stops and stands on home plate in Cloud Chief in memory of Dale Mitchell. Wow.
So my dad, Dale Mitchell, as Bob's talking about there, was from Cloud Chief, peak population 67. Hmm. So just dirt, poor farming community. When he died in 87, we went back for his funeral and the population had dropped to 12.
Oh,
12
boy.
People. But anyway, from that background, my dad became a great Major League Baseball player. And if I had to say, he had, what about my dad that I love? Great sense of humor. Mm. But I also like the fact that he was real strict.
Mm.
Son, this is what it looks like and feels like to hit 400. And this is what it looks like and feels like to hit 200. You get the difference? This stinks. and you're not going to do this, you're going to do this. Mm. Okay, that's got good. It, Dad. And what's my punishment if I don't?
Get right on.
But I didn't mind that. He drove us to excel in athletics. Academics, we were on the same page. Don't worry about it. but he was a lovable guy and really had no training because his dad died when he was 10 years old. But I would just say maybe taught me how to be friends with everybody.
Yeah.
He said people are just people and love them all. And he was a great guy. And I miss him.
Hmm.
But let's jump to the topic today, which is I really have never seen any better father than Luis. Your kids, introduce our listeners to your kids, first of all.
Well, first of all, let me say that even though, Bob, you and I didn't have fathers, I think we're good fathers.
Hmm.
And I don't know what – I have a suspicion that you decided to be a good dad. I decided to be a good dad. I figured – I've told my kids, I said, you're getting stuff from me that I never got. So I want to make sure that I leave this life with no regrets. I want to be able to say I gave you what I never got. Because I would always be real envious looking at young guys that I knew – and see their dads put their arm around their boys, and I thought, boy, I'd love to be the recipient of that. So I do that whenever my son, who's 26 years old, comes into town, he flies in, or I go see him. I kiss him on the neck, and, you know, about a month ago I saw him, and he kissed me on the neck, and I thought, isn't that great? I love that. I just love the look of that, you know, that you have a good relationship with your kids. And
Lou, we're going to talk about that later, though, the kissing on the neck thing. I got some advice.
Can we make that a whole different show, kissing on the neck?
That's cool, though. You know, my dad used to kiss me all the time on the cheek and pull me real close, and I was about 15, and he was doing it in the stands of a ball game one night, and I said, hey, Dad, how about we loosen the arm up just a little bit?
I just think it's neat. Well, I have three kids. I have the eldest is Elena. Elena's 34 years old, is married to Stephen Strawbridge. They have three kids. So I got three grandkids, and that's fun. The next one is Anna. Anna works at Save Our Youth with us, not married. Love to be married. And then my third is Amado, and Amado is a mechanical engineer, works out in Tucson, and he's 27 years old.
And I think I've known them all since they were born.
Yeah.
And watched them grow, and I don't even know where to start. They're loving, kind, friendly people, but also incredibly fierce competitors, just driven to excel athletically and now professionally, wouldn't you say?
Well, you know, yeah, they were good athletes, and, you know, it was, for me, it was one of these deals. I wrote a letter the other day, and talking about working with low-income kids, and I remember my mother telling me when she was a migrant worker with my dad, they'd pick cotton, hops, and sugar beets, and they'd look at the people who owned the farms, and they'd ask each other, well, how come they do so much better than we do? And I'd say, well, Mom, how'd you answer the question? And she says, I think they're just more intelligent than we are. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, that means we're destined to not be intelligent? And, you know, but I think that's the best she knew. She thought, this is it. This is our lot in life. And I always thought, well, how can I push my kids to a higher level because of what I've seen? How can I taste that? Can they taste that? And so Elena was a runner, and I went around town. I met all the top running coaches, and I said, what are you guys doing for your good runners? And I did that with Elena. Elena ended up being a state champion, went to Stanford, and then Amado.
And was captain of the
Stanford cross country team, girls team.
So you just kind of brushed over that. She went to Stanford and was the captain of the cross country
team. Captain of the team. She led the Bible study for the girls team, and that was fun. And Amado was
never weighed more than 120, but just decided to go ahead and beat the world.
Yeah. And then Anna was, you know, she went out to a little school out in Indiana, and she said she wants to play field hockey. She's never played field hockey. I'm thinking, you can't play field hockey. I'm thinking, but you can't tell them that. You got to say, okay, you want to play field hockey? Okay, get in the backyard and start hitting that. I didn't know anything about field hockey. And she made the team for a little school called DePaul out in Indiana for a couple of years. And then Amado said he wanted to kick. He wanted to play football. And he was in ninth grade. And I said, well, why do you want to do that? He said, well, because I want to do it. I said, well, you can't do that. Why not? I did say this verbally, a good father trait. And he said, why not? I said, well, look at us. We're like 5'7". We're like 130 pounds. We don't play football. They play football. Maybe it sounded like my mother's comment. You know, they're more smart than we are. But he went out. he became a kicker. They asked the question, anybody kick before? And he says, yeah, I quit soccer at age 10. Well, then send you kick. And he kicked, and he made All-State for Inglewood High School and went on to be the kicker at Northwestern in the Big Ten. And
set the record at Northwestern for most field goals in 1 year.
Yeah, Big Ten. Bob, you were there that weekend.
We got to see him play. It was really, really exciting. Yeah,
that was fun. I was living a dream. I was glad that he made the team so I can go to all the games. Yeah. So
we were living the dream that day, weren't we, Bob?
It was a blast, yeah. We were like uncles or something.
Yeah.
So
well,
excited for
yeah.
him.
I got to tell that story quickly. So Amato said to his dad, I don't want to just kick anywhere. I want to kick at a big school. I believe the coaches told him, don't walk on here.
Yeah, there's five kickers.
Yeah, you won't get a chance here. And he says, watch this. And we watched him kick enough to know that when he hit it, boy, he hit it hard and straight. Mm-hmm. But this day, Bob and I and a couple of Amato's real uncles,
yeah,
not just adopted uncles, flew out there. Was Bostrom with us?
No, I don't think. Was he?
Billy Bostrom was there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Bostrom went, and there were sort of five or six of us flew in. And Luis picked us up at the airport, took us to the stadium, and Amato's picture was featured on the cover of the Game Day program. Inside the Game Day program was a poster of Amato and some of the other special teams players. And then the first three times Northwestern got the ball, I believe they were playing Ohio, is that right?
Ohio, yes. They,
as the team's marching down the field, my partner here, Bob Belts, and I were screaming, stop them! Stop them!
That's right.
So we were cheering.
We're cheering for the offense not to get
a first down.
That's right.
And sure enough, three times in a row, they got stopped right where we needed it. Out came the field goal unit, and Motto just nailed it. And he ends up getting the Big Ten Special Teams Player of the Week.
The week, yeah.
And we were looking at each other like, this Luis has got the moves. He set it all up.
He set it all up.
For us and the uncles. I can't remember which uncles were there. Were.
Yeah, Dan and Rudy. Yeah.
Well, that was a cool memory, but it just for me was a celebration of your and your role as a dad, Nancy's role as a mom, because you guys deserved days like that. What a reward!
It was fun. Yeah, yeah. Nancy always got into it. She always wanted to go into the locker room at halftime. I said, Nancy, you cannot go into the locker room. You are not a coach. Well, they got to do better out in the field. O-line's got to be better, and the D-line's got to be tougher. I said, Nancy, you will embarrass your son. You cannot go in the locker room.
Nancy's another 110-pound bundle of dynamite. Boy, she'd get competitive.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, we all love your kids, but same to you, Bob. You got great kids. Let's talk a little about some of the points that we'd make as dads, knowing we all blunder plenty, but how can we encourage dads that are listening to just – do something right. What would you say, Bob?
I was thinking as Lou was talking and thinking back to, I'm sure that kind of the lack of a father in my life was a big motivator.
Yeah.
I know my wife and I both came out of divorced families, and for us, you know, like from day one, we said, you know, we might assassinate each other, but we're not going to get divorced, and kind of breaking that chain almost. And so I had I had a great desire, you know, to be a good dad, and like you, didn't really have great models. But probably one of the biggest things that happened to me that helped facilitate that was when Bo and I began doing the we did a series of retreats through the years for men, and talking about the priorities of life and what was really important, and we focused quite a bit on parenting, and it kind of forced me to, you know, do the research and the reading and try and figure out what are, you know, some of the real positive characteristics. And for me, then that became, you know, that almost a guideline to try and to implement in the life of my own kids. That kids, you know, kind of the three great gifts almost that kids need is, number one, they really need our time, and not just quality time, which can be, which they do need, but sometimes that can become a cop-out for not really giving enough time. They need both quality time, but they also need some quantity of time. So I really, you know, had made that a priority to, and I was very fortunate that I had the flexibility in my work schedule that if my kids needed me or they were doing something at school or there was a program, I could go do it, unlike, you know, a lot of other fathers. Then they need and I'm always alliterating to remember these things, but they really also need our tenderness.
Yeah.
And there's the scripture that we used when we would teach these retreats was the text in Ephesians that says fathers nurture, literal translation, nurture. Most of them translate it raise up your children, but the literal translation, nurture your children in the instruction and discipline of the Lord. And that idea of nurturing there, it, we would tend in our culture to view as a feminine trait, that that mothers are the ones who are the nurturers, and yet the Bible was saying fathers nurture your kids. And so kind of the idea of what we were talking about earlier, that our kids need us to hug them and, you know, and show affection and express that to them. And so, you know, that, again, having not had that myself, trying to figure out what that looked like was a challenge. And then finally, the third thing that they need is truth, that, you know, we're entrusted, you know, with the lives of these little people who really need to learn that there's a God that exists and that loves them and cares for them, and then try and help them figure out, you know, how to get into relationship with them. So the, I think that for me, doing those retreats was always a constant reminder to myself, you know, that I needed to be focusing on that stuff with things with my kids.
That's good.
So our guest today on You Get the Blessing is Luis Villarreal, and we're just talking about fatherhood and things we can do to be better fathers. So Lou, you heard from Bob there on time, truth, and tenderness. What are some tips you would give the listeners in terms of what you did to be the great dad I've observed you being?
You know, I think I what I'm going to share, I think I've put together even in the last few years, but when I was a young kid, as I said, my mother was a migrant worker, third grade education. She when I went away to college, she said, and this sounds bad, but this is who she was. She said, son, she said in Spanish, she said, son, if college gets too hard, just come home. And I remember thinking, well, what kind of advice is that? And later in life, I told my mom, Mom, you ought to write a book about that. She said, I said that? I said, yeah. She says, well, what did I know? I said, well, you did the best you could. And so in my mind, I thought, boy, if I can put a dream in my kid's heart, put a dream in there. They can dream something they could be. And then if I can, I remember Bob Hurley's father, Bobby Hurley was a guard for Duke championship team. And older Bobby Hurley Sr. said, I want to put my voice in their head. So when they're in trouble and they're in a situation, I want them to hear me. And I thought, you know what? A voice, people hear a lot of voices, but if we can attach a person to the voice, an identity to the voice, our identity, they're going to remember that, and they're going to take it on to the next generation. So a dream in their heart, a voice in their head. And then someone else came up with this phrase, and I've adopted it. He said, we got to load their lips. We got to load their lips with phrases. We got to load their lips with communication, with language that gives hope to everybody else and dreams. But also are able, as the Bible says in Peter, he says, always be ready to give an answer for the hope that is in you. And part of loading a person's lips is to give them words to say, to respond to situations that always come up that are hard. So we can teach them phrases, teach them how to communicate. I figure, okay, a dream, a voice, and an answer. I love that.
I do, too.
That's a great. I'm ready to go do another retreat now because I have a new talk.
Yeah.
3 points. That's just good, Lou.
Well, if you steal it, that's a form of flattery.
Yes.
That's okay.
Yeah. You don't have to give me credit either.
You did it well. So at critical points, your kids have something to fall back on, because I know Jim Dobson teaches adolescence is a tough period of life.
Yeah.
And your kids better have the support of a dad, a mom, hopefully, because it takes two, and get them through that period where we're really in a seat of friendship, counsel, encouragement, responsibility as dad. So, unfortunately, Bob and I used to talk about this when we taught too. My dad was gone a lot playing baseball. So, Bob, tell him that concept about dad and daddy, because I think we invented this. It was really good, because all relationships are reconcilable, but this one's not.
Well, I remember when you first began kind of telling this story, I think it was you'd heard an interview with Burt Reynolds, wasn't it? And somebody had asked Burt Reynolds, what do you want to be remembered for? And he said, well, I'd like to be remembered as being a great daddy. Did he use the daddy or the dad word? I can't remember. And anyway, it was very weird because he wasn't married and didn't have any kids at the time. But, I remember
he was dating around, actually.
Yeah. And Bo kind of something triggered in his head about the fact that, you know, we're always going to be dads, because that never changes.
Mm-hmm.
But we really have sort of a period of years where we're daddies, and it's short, it goes fast, and in the world in which we live, it seems to, you know, correspond exactly with the years where we're under the most pressure to be putting time into our careers and jobs, and mm-hmm. and it's a tough juggling act, and so that was another thing we tried to kind of help guys figure out, because a lot of guys were at that point in time that when we were with them were thought, well, raising the kids is that's mom's job. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
And nowadays it's even shorter because you don't know when that day is going to come when your little one's going to look at you and call you dad instead of daddy.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oops, whatever that was just came and went in a flash. But like I had a great dad forever till he died in 87. But I didn't have much of a daddy because he was gone playing baseball. Mm. So if you are gone, men, you got to really work at it. This day of social media, you can communicate. You can take time wherever you are, get back in touch with your wife, kids, and say the right things because they need to hear it from you. But I always thought both of you guys were good at that, very attentive as daddies from my point of view, and still attentive as dads. And the role does change when you become a dad.
I've watched your daughter, when I've gone to Highline, I've seen your daughter sit in the front row. You got the grandkids there. To me, when you see grandparents and you got the kids who are now adults, to me, you know, there's just something, it makes me tear up. It's just an emotional thing to see. It's one of the most beautiful pictures I've ever seen. And I mean that, not just because of the show. I see it and I just stare. It's like watching a good athlete, you know. That's how I view it.
Yeah.
It's that powerful.
Well, there's nothing as powerful as family. And we're in the chairs that are supposed to be leading, making it better or worse.
And for those guys out there that are feeling like right now, like driving off the road. Now, I got to say, it's also, honestly, one of the most guilt-producing occupations in the world.
Tough.
And you never... I'm at a point in my life, like you said, where I'm looking at grandkids, but I still, you know, feel like I didn't do a good enough job, you know, with my kids. And so, you know, I don't know what all goes on there, but it certainly is, if you're feeling like you just really, you know, blew it. I think the other thing is, you know, I definitely right now have better relationships with my daughter and my son than I've had at times during the course of just how, you know, kids and parents develop. So both of my kids have gone through, you know, the rebellious phases. And, you know, I thought what Bo was going to say when your kid looks at you and says dad instead of daddy. But I also remember the day that my daughter looked at me and said, I don't believe anything you believe. And, you know, I think you're just, you know, full of crap. And anyway, and so to see her come around and now, you know, her and the whole family have, you know, faith is such a great thing too. But again, I don't think it's ever too late.
Never too late.
It's never too late. And there's a lot of grown men and women out there that wish their older, you know, mom and dad that are still around would come up and say, I love you and I'm proud of you. And, you know, you've done well. So don't give up if you're out there feeling like you've.
Yeah. Start today. My father-in-law grew up as an only child, neglected really. And, when he turned about 64, he called every one of his children, three of them. He apologized and he asked for forgiveness for not being a daddy. And you know what? I saw him change. I saw him change. He was more physical. He'd wrap his arms around him and then the grandkids. And he was that old, but he changed and finished well.
Wow. So you can be a great granddaddy even if you miss the daddy phase.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, you guys are both dynamic, wonderful leaders for the cause of Christ in this community and around the world, frankly. But
Hey, let me say one word before we go, too, because we've monopolized the time. But, Bo, you have done an amazing job as a dad, and I think you've been an inspiration to all of us. And your son, Andy, is just this amazing young man, and your daughter, Ashley, is just a sweetheart. And honestly, you're a way better granddad than I am, which is my next new granddad. Task, because I watch the way you've built into the lives and just the way your grandkids love you. So you haven't talked about yourself, but you are a great encouragement to all of us.
Well, thank you. I wasn't fishing for that and didn't. I don't. I'm not aware of that.
I've got it. That
what you wrote right here.
So
I said, all right.
As you were talking, Bob, I said, I believe in that. I believe what you're saying. Yeah. Andy said, Dad, I want to be like you someday. And I said, really? He said, yeah, I want to pretend I'm sick so I can come home from work, lay on the floor, watch the ball game.
the things they do pick up are a little scary.
I was home with the flu that day and watching the game with him, and he thought, that's what I want to be. Lou, you're a great man. Thank you for
thanks, Lou.
Pouring for your life into
looking
all of
forward
us.
To doing a little fishing this year.
Let's do it.
Blessings, everybody, and come back and see us next week here on You Get the Blessing. Thanks, Bob.
Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day.